Many of you with very well developed intuition may have a sense of what the topic of my talk is. I think it would be interesting to give a handout and then give a talk on an entirely different topic. But indeed, I'm intending to talk about the theme of forgiveness. And my thought was actually today and 2 weeks from now to begin with attention to what we might call heart practices. We have these different kinds of core practices, I think, our core inner practices. Is there still a little bit of feedback or echo? A little bit, it's okay. I think maybe if I keep this a little bit further away, it's a little bit better. I think that's what it is. And we can often reflect on the different kind of practices that we have as inner practices. We have practices that we can use to develop qualities of the heart, practices like loving kindness or compassion, forgiveness, equanimity, joy, gratitude, and so forth, that are wonderful to do every day. And one of my encouragements will be to do a heart practice every day until we meet again. And it might be forgiveness practice. And they're wonderful practices just to do 10 minutes a day. It starts to, as many of you know who do practices like that, it can really have an influence on the rest of your day. Just a short amount of time. We also have a variety of practices we might call mind practices, connect with mindfulness or inquiry or developing wisdom. And we have a number of practices that help us ground in our bodies as well, that connect with our either awareness of the body or, as in the Qigong practices, with the inner energy. And those are just some of the inner practice. We can kind of classify it like that. We have other practices for speech or interaction and so forth. But today and 2 weeks from now, I want to give focused attention on the practices we can call heart practices, which are really about cultivating kindness, cultivating the qualities of the open heart. And forgiveness is a particularly potent practice because, in a sense, forgiveness is a more advanced practice. We develop metta, or loving kindness, which is our default practice for really being with our experience with kindness and with an open heart. And forgiveness is a practice that presupposes that there have been problems. It's interesting. Or presupposes that there's been some pain or some difficulty. And it's a very powerful practice because it's really about, can I have that open heart and kindness even when there's pain, even when there's suffering, even when my mind is tight, even when I've been polarized, even when I have been caught. Another way of saying it, can I have an open heart and freedom when things are difficult? So it's, we might say, intermediate or advanced practice, and a very crucial part of our practice. If our practice is only good when things are going well, it won't take us too far. And so we need practices that we can work with when things are more difficult. So forgiveness is a powerful practice in that way. And it's a practice which has been part of the Buddhist tradition since the inception, and it's also a very, very strong practice in other traditions where there's sometimes different interpretations. Much of the power of forgiveness in the Western world comes out of the Jewish and Christian traditions. It's also there very much in the Islamic tradition. And there are the very powerful teachings, particularly of Jesus, to engage as much as possible in a kind of universal forgiveness, to take forgiveness as an intention, which is really another way of saying it. I think it's very parallel to what we find in Buddhist tradition. And it's really saying, no matter what happens, I want to incline towards the open heart. No matter what happens, I want to incline towards the open heart, and I want to incline towards freedom. So it's radical. It's a radical stance, and the forgiveness practice gives us concrete ways of following that intention in both small and large ways, with both small things and large things. And a lot of our practice of forgiveness benefits by a focus on small things, small problems, small pains, small suffering. Much like the metta practice, which many of us know, we don't at all start with the most difficult situations. That would actually be foolish. Sometimes it's inescapable, but to the extent that we can choose our practice, we work up to the difficult ones. And sometimes we work up for a very long time to them. And we start with the easier practices. It's very interesting that in Buddhist tradition, the word that we translate as forgiveness is kama, K-H-A-M-A, which is also means the earth. There's a sense almost of the quality of forgiveness comes from this immovable commitment to the open heart when there are difficulties. Much like the earth, it's immovable. It's going to be there whatever happens. So a few more words about what forgiveness is and what it isn't. Some words about the dynamics of forgiveness. And then I want to take us through the forgiveness practice with commentary, but also with some time to have some short periods with the four phases that I have on the handout for forgiveness practice, these four expressions of forgiveness. So I'd like to do that before we finish, so we have a lived experience of the forgiveness practice, can do it if we feel called, but also have an understanding of forgiveness. So maybe first two quotations. The first is from President John Kennedy. "Forgive your enemies, but never forget their names." Not totally in the spirit that I'll be teaching tonight. Another comment that some of you may know, this one, this is from Oscar Wilde. "Always forgive your enemies. Nothing annoys them so much." So if the essence of forgiveness is the intention to stay with the open heart no matter what happens, and particularly with difficulties, it's also really important to remember what forgiveness is not. And it is not about, first of all, condoning what happened. Forgiveness is really about, as an inner practice, and it is both an inner practice and an outer practice. It's both an inner practice that we do with our own minds and hearts and bodies, and it's an outer practice which we sometimes do in relationships. There can be a way that we work to forgive another in a relational context, not just in an inner context. The primary way it's been taught in Buddhist tradition is as an inner practice. But I think it can be done in both ways. And I'll be primarily teaching it as an inner practice. And so as an inner practice, it really is about realizing that no matter what's happened, if I have reactivity and pain and suffering, but particularly if I have reactivity and suffering in my own experience because of something that's happened, then in a sense I am suffering. And we somehow can realize that I am holding something from the past. Is there a way that I don't need to, that I can move beyond that reactivity and the suffering? Now, right away we have to say that it is the reactivity in relation to something that happened which is the problem, because out of that reactivity I will suffer and I will tend to act unskillfully. So we want, in a way, to transform the reactivity through the forgiveness, but by no means are we condoning anything that happened. And in fact, forgiveness can go hand in hand, and should, in a sense, go hand in hand with skillful response. We can fully acknowledge that what happened was not okay, was not appropriate, should not happen again, and we can take steps so it won't happen again, as much as that's in our power. We can, in an interpersonal relationship, we can set a boundary. We can say, I don't want that to happen again, or I will respond in this way if that happens again, or please, that's not acceptable, or whatever language we use. That can go hand in hand with forgiveness, not condoning, even taking strong action. But the action hopefully doesn't come out of reactivity. So in a similar way, it's not about forgetting what happened. It's not about excusing what happened. It really is recognizing that a skillful response to something that happened will not come out of reactivity, will not come out of my own tightness. Jack Kornfield has a good one-liner. He says that forgiveness is giving up hope of a better past. It's interesting. And it's very interesting in terms of the relation to the past. I was reading on forgiveness, and I read the philosopher Hannah Arendt. Some of you may have seen a recent film. How many saw the film about her life? Anyone? Okay. Hannah Arendt. She was one of the great philosophers of the 20th century. Born in Germany in beginning of the 20th century, Jewish, fled from the Nazis, wrote books on totalitarianism, and the film is especially about a period where she wrote a very famous book about the Eichmann trial. She was the one who coined the phrase the banality of evil, and about the way that evil in the modern age, so-called, often takes a bureaucratic form or takes the form of faceless organizations carrying out their negative actions. So that's very applicable now. And so, but she wrote that forgiveness is very interesting because it goes against the way that we actually think that the past is irreversible and can, in a sense, address the past, and an action which was irreversible and might, bring negativity, we can shift that. We can shift our attitude towards the past. When we engage in the practice of forgiveness, we work with certain assumptions. The first is really that we can, in a sense, distinguish the person from the action. and we can aspire to connect with the heart of the person, even though the action was negative, might be criticized in the case of smaller everyday actions, and in case of large actions might be seen as completely unacceptable, that we can actually separate between the person and the deed. And that distinction is fundamental for forgiveness. You know, it's that the person himself or herself we can hold as imperfect, as prone like all of us to being unskillful at times, to doing things, but in essence, having a good heart and ideally being on a journey of learning. Learning how to open the heart, learning how to be wise. And we really affirm that attitude with people with whom we have difficulty. And again, that goes against our conditioning, which is when we have difficulties with someone, we will tend to create a wall. We will tend to polarize. We will tend to not think that this is actually a human being like us. This is a person, we might say, whom we have othered. The person becomes an other. And forgiveness knocks down those walls, really. We're no longer polarized. And so that distinction is really important. And I was thinking of that because my mom is here, as some of you know, and I think she taught us that distinction between the person and the deed. And she was telling me a story involving my brother, Frederick, that when he was 5, he did something that she thought was unskillful. She didn't use that language. Unskillful is probably, you know, we'd use some other words. But he did something, and she wanted very much to communicate to him that that she loved him, but the action was problematic and don't do it again as much as you can, right? And so she started talking about, I really love you, and yet, you know, what you did, I don't like. And he responded, don't talk to me like a psychologist. Why can't you just spank me like Billy's father does? So you see, in one model where, you know, a bad deed, so to speak, just brings punishment, there may not be that distinction. But we are making that distinction. There's another wonderful story I heard of a boy. I think this is a true story, of a boy who had been brought up with that distinction. He had been brought up to know that there were actions which his parents didn't like and tried to have him not repeat, and yet he was essentially good. And so his family and another family went on a trip, and he was 3 and a half at the time, and he sat with a girl about the same age in the back seat, and he did something which she didn't like, and he said, you're a bad boy. At which point he responded to her, there are no bad boys, there are only bad actions. I don't know what her response was, but and so that distinction is really, really crucial, that we really affirm, in a sense, the goodness of the person in forgiveness. And we affirm the possibility of the relationship. And those of you who have studied forgiveness know that there are some utterly amazing stories related to forgiveness. You know, that you know, I was looking at one that I'm not going to talk about now because it's a little bit too long, but some of you may have seen there was an article, I think in the New York Times Magazine about a year ago, which was a story about two families who lived in Florida, I think in the Tallahassee area, and they were very close to each other because one of their one family had a young man who was 19, and the other family had a young woman who was 19, and they were boyfriend and girlfriend, and they spent all sorts of time together. The boy, young man, and the young woman fought a lot, and at one moment, after days of incessant fighting, the young man, in a crazy state, killed the woman. And the families were with each other from the beginning. And they were intending to work with forgiveness from the beginning. And it's an amazing story because, you know, right away, like even when they first heard about it, the father of the young man went to be with the other family, right? And stayed with them. And they were able to find a prosecutor who was willing to go along with the system called restorative justice, which is an alternative to the system of punishment. And it really goes hand in hand with forgiveness. Some of you know that as a way of dealing with criminal justice issues. And it is totally connected with forgiveness. And they have meetings where they got together. And, you know, it was an amazing story to read, you know, to have this sense of how the families work together. Of course, they had to work through things because it's one of the aspects of forgiveness is that it can't be rushed. And we may find that, particularly at the more difficult situations of forgiveness, that we have to go through anger or go through other emotions or be with the mind not at all wanting to forgive, you know. So it's, you know, it really, I was thinking that there are, you know, people who are inclined to forgiveness, I think it's possible to have a kind of shadow related to forgiveness where people forgive too easily or too quickly or don't go through anger or don't go through what has to be there along the way of forgiveness. So in this practice, why don't I go to the practice and I'll give some commentary on these four phases. Typically, forgiveness practice as an inner practice is done with three phases. The first is to ask for forgiveness from someone who has done something which we might say harms oneself, that has harmed me. The second phase is to offer forgiveness if there has been harm from another. The third phase is to offer forgiveness for myself for whatever I have done that has led to suffering. And the fourth phase is something that I've added that is not traditionally found, but this is something that I've learned from my friend and colleague, Larry Yang, who teaches at Spirit Rock and East Bay Meditation Center. And he wanted to add an aspect of forgiveness in which we actually, in a sense, forgive reality for the level of suffering. And not that reality needs forgiveness, but we need to forgive, right? This is to, it's to, in a sense, forgive the nature of things for there being the level of suffering, either that we've experienced personally or that we know in the world, you know? And so I find that quite resonant, you know? And, you know, whether it, you know, and it takes us into some of the larger dimensions of suffering potentially. Now, before going into this, I wanted to say one word that, strictly speaking, the chains of causality in relationship to me suffering or me receiving harm are complex. That is, someone may say something to me that maybe had a mean intention and was quite nasty, and whether I suffer is going to depend also on my inner factors, right? And we know that something which maybe a child would say to an adult that would be very nasty and mean would not cause suffering in the adult. You know, and there may be things that someone said to us 3 years ago, or this type of thing that someone said 3 years ago. Now I've worked through some things, and I don't get so angry, and I don't suffer so much. Let's say when someone challenges me in public about something, could be something like that. And so the chains of causality are complex, and whether I suffer or whether I am quote-unquote harmed or whether I am quote-unquote hurt is going to depend on both the action and on quite a lot of inner factors and my own capacities. These subtleties are not reflected in the language here. You know, we use the very simple language typically in forgiveness practice, in any way that I have harmed you or you have harmed me. It's very simple. It doesn't include the subtleties I just mentioned. Please understand when you do the forgiveness practice that there are those kind of complexities and subtleties. I once tried to develop forgiveness phrases that fully incorporated such subtleties. And they were hopeless. You know, I think I tried them for 2 weeks and gave up. There was like, if in any way you have acted in ways that have triggered me to lead and led me to suffer, you know, you get the idea, right? So just know that complexity is important to understand because we don't simply act. You know, a given action doesn't cause harm or suffering by itself. It depends on what's there in my own inner being, okay? So the first phrase, we can do this practice in a few different ways. And probably, how many of you have done forgiveness practice? Some. How many of you have it as a fairly regular practice? Okay, so just a few of you. But probably half of you have done it. So in doing a practice like this, we can, like in loving kindness practice, we can say the phrase internally to ourselves. And this can be something that we can work with these four phrases and maybe stay anywhere from 1 to 3 minutes with each of the phases, each of the four. So we might say the phrase to ourselves and just stay with it and see what happens. We can also do the practice either by just saying the phrase and seeing what comes up for us. Like I find sometimes I say the phrase in any way that I have harmed you, or I've harmed someone, and I don't know who I have harmed, and then my little moral scanning mechanism finds something that happened yesterday or the day before. Oops, I better attend to that one, right? So you can do it that way, or you could also, ahead of time, have someone in mind, some difficult interaction that happened yesterday or in the last week. We generally, much like in working with loving kindness practice for a difficult person, we don't start with the most difficult situation. Okay? We would start maybe on a scale of 10, we might start with a difficulty of level 5. Maybe even less. Something difficult or something that happened, maybe someone at work said something a little nasty, maybe someone in your immediate circle did something and you got irritated by it, right, for whatever reason. And you might bring that to mind deliberately and just hold that situation and that person in your mind as you say a phrase. So you can do it either way. Just let spontaneous situations come to mind or have a particular situation in mind. You can do that for each of the three, actually each of the four, okay? So the first one says, in any way that I have harmed you, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I ask for your forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. So I invite you just now to see what comes to mind and just stay with it for a minute or two. And you can look at the handout and repeat the phrase, could repeat it every 30 seconds or every minute if you wish. Then we can move to the second. And in a similar way, we can bring to mind a situation, it could be the same situation as the first, where someone has done something that is connected with my own pain or suffering, and I offer forgiveness to that person. So I'll invite us to do that again now. Thank you. So I'm going through it briefly, partly just so we have a sense. And I have actually found that in terms of interpersonal relationships, forgiveness practice, along with compassion practice, are actually much more effective with difficult relationships in terms of a heart practice. They're much more effective than metta practice for me and for many people, like metta for the difficult person. Sometimes that can, and this is going to be individual, but I have found that forgiveness practice and compassion practice, but here we'll talk about forgiveness practice, is what I would go to first in the situation of a difficult relationship or something difficult that's come up, because it goes right to, it seems to go right to the open heart. And particularly the pain, it really touches right in at the pain or the suffering or the difficulty. And because of that, the heart tends to open and we are less with our positions. It takes us out of our positions, really. It takes us out of our positions and judgments because we touch the suffering. And that's what forgiveness practice is going to do. And that's why it can be incredibly powerful interpersonally, for oneself, and actually socially as well. Because it has the potential to touch in a simple way the open heart and cut through polarization, cut through positions, cut through hardening. So the third is also very powerful and important. You know, and many of us in this culture may actually find it easier to forgive others than to forgive ourselves. And for many of us, there are deeply conditioned tendencies to judge ourselves, to be harsh with ourselves. And again, the forgiveness practice can be really, really powerful and helpful. Now, again, I should say that we work up to the difficult situations, and there can be tremendous learning just from working with forgiveness practice in very small, everyday ways. I find forgiveness practice is a very helpful adjunct to driving an automobile. And you can do forgiveness on the spot. Someone cuts you off, 30 seconds of forgiveness practice. You do something, you're in a hurry, you know, you go through a red light and someone honks at you and you know, that happens. Forgiveness practice, to do it in small ways. I find it's kind of like on the spot cleaning up of the mess. And it's great, and it can have that cleansing feel to it when you do it regularly. So you can do it, you know, you've just had a difficult phone conversation or, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe a telemarketer calls, right? They're not supposed to call. I'm on a do not call list. And does that happen to you? How many of you are on do not call list, which seem to not result in people not calling? Anyway, so you might, negative thoughts towards telemarketers are still negative thoughts. And I once lived next door to a telemarketer. He was very hardworking and very wonderful man. It's a very hard job. And so let's suppose that you are nasty to a telemarketer. You can do forgiveness practice on the spot a moment later. So you get the idea. You can really do it. Maybe even something larger has happened. Hang out with forgiveness practice. I have found even doing forgiveness practice at retreats with some of the bigger things in my life really had an impact, really had some movement. It's an amazing practice. It really is quite something. And so this practice towards oneself, again, we want to build up the capacity for forgiveness by working with it with small things. It's not going to work otherwise, because it's, and then we maybe turn to the larger things. So let's do the third one. In any way that I have harmed myself, knowingly or unknowingly, by thought, word, or action, I offer myself forgiveness as much as is possible in this moment. And then we move to the fourth. We move to the fourth situation, which is that of seeing whether there is bitterness in our own hearts. Because to be alive means to be in contact with pain, both our own and that of the world, that of others, of the earth, of different species. And when we tune into it, it's a lot, and it can be overwhelming. I can recall having had conversations with a very close friend of mine who often would say, there is so much beauty in this world, and there is so much pain. How do they go together? How do they connect? And I think this fourth phase of practice can partly help us tune into what's difficult if we find ourselves not wanting to, or in some ways wanting to protect ourselves from the pain of the world. And it can be, again, it can be something that really helps with whatever is there that's either trying to protect our heart, hardening our heart, or bitterness, or whatever is there, this last one. And I'll just make a comment or two. One of the areas of the world where forgiveness has been used in a very large scale has been in South Africa. Many of you know of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And some of the stories are amazing. There's a beautiful book by Desmond Tutu called No Future Without Forgiveness, which has story after amazing story. And I was also reflecting on that because I think a little over 10 years ago, I was at a meeting at the Abbey of Gethsemane in Kentucky, where Thomas Merton had been a monk. And I was invited there, along with about 25 other people who had an interest in connecting spirituality with social service and social change. And it was from all over the world, and it was a privilege to be there. I remember Helen Prejean was there, who wrote that book, that became the basis for Dead Man Walking, the film. And there were three people from South Africa there. One of them was a man named Blessing Finca. I got to know them. I ended up hanging out with them a lot. It was about a five-day conference. And I eventually did an interview with Blessing Finca. He was one of the commissioners who worked with Desmond Tutu on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I did an interview with him, which was later published, on the work of the commission. And I just wanted to read you a little bit from this, from the interview I did, because it was very powerful in terms of seeing forgiveness in action in relation to the pain of the world on a pretty large scale. We heard continually, Blessing Finca says, of the atrocities that had been committed. There were gruesome stories like that of the murder of the four United Democratic Front activists from Craddock, who in 1985 were abducted, tortured, and killed, and whose bodies were burned. As the perpetrators from the security forces were burning their bodies on one side, on another side they were having what we call bray, which is a barbecue. They were drinking beer. Actually, the bodies took 7 hours to burn. And they were sitting around having a barbecue while they were waiting for the bodies to finish burning. The kind of cruelty that went with the system of apartheid was just unbelievable. But in all of it, people came forth and gave testimonies and said, "We want to forgive." I remember hearing the testimony of the daughter of one of the four gentlemen from Craddock, a girl who was 16 years old. She said, "I want to forgive, but I do not know whom to forgive. If only I could know who did what to my father, I would like to forgive." This was such a moving testimony by a young person who at that age we would expect to be so bitter, but there was no bitterness. So often the attitudes and responses of the victims to the Truth Commission were just amazing. It was an indication of the fact that people who suffered most became so generous in spirit for some strange reason. And then I asked him, "What made that possible?" "I have absolutely no idea," he said. "We are talking about people who have suffered things that one would think gave them the right to be angry and to demand vengeance, people who have nothing." To hear a person like the young woman he mentioned say, "I'm ready to forgive," is just unbelievable. And they heard that over and over there. So let's work with this last phase. And again, we don't have to go to something big, but just to see what comes up. "For any way that I have been unable to be with the pain and suffering of our world, my own and that of others, may I come to accept pain, suffering, confusion, and ignorance to be part of the journey, my own journey and the journey of others. I offer forgiveness for the way that things are and have been as much as is possible in this moment." Thank you so much for your attention. Let me see if there are questions, please. Yeah. Please.
With questions?
Yeah.
Then, how would you gradually take the practice? So you do that of 10 minutes a day. You start with the number 5.
Yeah.
Places that are wounded, or I thought were wounded, still there's some feeling. And I thought, ooh, I'd rather practice equanimity. And then when you brought it down to 5, oh, okay, I can handle that.
Yeah.
And how would I gradually bring it up? And the time that I did it, that I did about 2 years of practice of forgiveness, I needed to do it like daily, right?
Yeah. How to start, how to bring the forgiveness practice gradually, let's say, to places where there's more difficulty, maybe more of a closer to 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. So a few things. I think your suggestion, or you're talking about equanimity practice, is helpful because this goes along with all of our other practices. And I actually think it's helpful before doing forgiveness practice to do metta. This would be something very good to do at the end of a practice session, maybe after a half hour, do it the last 10 minutes or something when the mind is relatively quiet. And maybe do a few minutes of metta first so it kind of opens up the heart some. I think that could be good. And it can, if you know equanimity practice, that can also be quite helpful. There's a mix when, so I think to have a repertoire of those is good. And then I would say, if you haven't done the forgiveness practice for a while, for people here for whom it's relatively new, I would start out maybe for 2 weeks or 4 weeks, do it every day for 10 minutes with 5 level challenges. And then I think you can then start bringing it maybe to 7. I would do it gradually. Again, sometimes we just have stuff in our face, right? That's 9 or 10, right? And you can do your best there. But just to know that we don't force forgiveness, for one thing. It's a practice. It's really, I didn't quite say it quite so explicitly, but it is a practice, which it's an intention practice, like the other heart practices, which means that our work is just to do the practice and not to say what should happen. And we have to be open to be doing the forgiveness practice and feel a closed heart. And that's fine. It's because it is a practice. So I would work up to it slowly. And you can also maybe just do more time as you get with the more difficult ones. Yeah. Please, yeah.
Yeah. Where there's a lot of blame, a lot of thinking and talking. So to me, when I conceive of practicing forgiveness,
yeah,
I see so much chatter. So I can't. I like. How do I decide? You know, did I wrong him? Did he wrong me? You know, who? I just see myself thinking so much about who's to blame, and so which forgiveness, which part of this do I say? And mm-hmm.
So what to do when there's a lot of thinking about something that happened and we're not even clear who, so to speak, is to blame. Again, maybe you can start with smaller ones and build the muscle, maybe where there's maybe not so much thinking or the situation's clearer. You know, like maybe the example I gave, you know, just everyday small things where you felt clearly I did something that was unskillful. And you work for forgiveness in relation to the other. Family stuff is probably not going to be in the 5 range. That's not an answer to your question, but when we would get to that, the family material, that's where it probably could be helpful to work with quieting the mind and maybe just work in a really simple way. I would say maybe, if your mind instantly goes into a lot of thinking, that's not going to be so helpful. So maybe to do it after the end of a sitting when your mind is relatively more quiet, don't go into the simplest situation you can think of, maybe where it is clear who has more responsibility. So I guess what I'm suggesting in response also is work with a little bit of structure to develop the forgiveness muscle. A little bit of structure, meaning choose certain situations where it's not so complex or not so, oh my God, who's to blame? We're all in this together.
So seriously, something as simple as like, oh,
Work, start with where it's simple and where you can just work like that. Please, Patty.
I want to thank you for this. I learned this on a retreat a few years ago where I found it most useful, and I still use it when the time's appropriate, is when somebody died and I had a hard time forgiving him for leaving.
Yeah.
And I was sort of at a loss for the anger of it and the disappointment of, like, why didn't you take better care of yourself? You know, you'd still be here if blah, blah, blah. And I was taught this practice.
Yeah.
And it really helps, even if the person is not in a position to ever verbalize forgiveness back to you.
Right.
It helped me tremendously.
Right. Yeah, so reflection on forgiving someone even who has died, or it could be someone in an analogous way with whom one will not have any more contact, right? Might be alive, but the contact's gone, but there's still something. So this is where forgiveness is really about what is unfinished in our hearts. And it's a great example. You can see that it could be, you know, really, really effective in that kind of situation of someone we have anger or judgment in relation to someone who died. Yeah, so it's a great example. Please, yeah.
In a situation where you have to have interaction with someone who repetitively causes harm, yet you have to interact with them, when you're doing the practice and you're getting to your heart and your heart's opening and vulnerable, then actually, can you speak to the fact that it's not always a straight shot to freedom? If you have to have an open heart and you're going to be continue to receive more of the same type of unskillful action from someone else, if it's a repetitive process.
Someone is acting repetitively in ways which feel hurtful, or I suffer in some ways, and how to work with that. Does going into that with an open heart lead one to suffer more, we might say. So again, forgiveness, maybe two things come immediately. One is that, again, that sounds like it's probably towards the 9 or 10 part of the spectrum, which is fine. But it would be valuable to work up to it. And no, it's just like in almost anything we do, but it's very explicit when we teach loving kindness or those other practices. We always say for the loving kindness for the difficult person, start in the middle and work up to it. And so not to try to go to places where the muscle's not sufficiently developed. Although sometimes, like I said, sometimes it's in your face, so you have to, you have to go there to some extent. And then I would say that, working with a difficult, repetitive situation, you can have the intention to have your heart open, and the intention in the long run to forgive, and that doesn't dictate at all. Or maybe I should take that back. That doesn't dictate your action or your response. You may still want to set boundaries. You may want to be very, very careful about what you say in return. You may want to just tell that, act in a way which protects yourself. Obviously, that would be very important. And protecting yourself, you may not be at your most loving. And that would be fine. But because, again, we want to think of this as a generally a much higher degree of difficulty situation. And it's going to be hard. It's very hard in a situation where you have to act and the heart's closed down, maybe, and you feel there's a danger or there's a threat. And how do you act? This is a much higher degree of difficulty situation. And we're going to train with situations that have elements of that difficult situation, but aren't as hard. And so that it really is important for forgiveness to think that we work up to the most difficult ones. Maybe just one more. I think we should. We need to finish for the closing announcements. Okay, so maybe one more. I hope that started to get at it, but there's a lot more I could say about that, but that would be a starter.
I think that for the first one, I think I have to put it in two separate categories, because if I caused harm and I knowingly caused
Yeah.
It's much more work than when I unknowingly caught
time. Oh, yeah.
So that's...
Yeah, that's perfect freedom to subdivide. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think, and the other thing to say is that some of you may want to rephrase these. Use your own words. Use your own language. This is more more just pointing to some basic dimensions of forgiveness. You know, I think I wanted to... Okay.
This is in reference to your story about Desmond Tutu.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
And he was very skillful in leading them in saying we're taking a break, and then he would lead them in song and dance, so that they were moved into a different mode of their somatic, you know, their bodies, their hearts. And when all of that tension had a place to be channeled to, and they'd come down, then they'd come back.
That's right. Yeah, that's there are actually several films on that Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I think one of them was called, was it Long Night's Journey into Day, I think. I think one of them was called that. And then Bill Moyers did a PBS special on it, which might be available on the internet, which is quite remarkable. I actually had a story very closely related to what you said that I was going to read at the end, but I ran out of time.